And now, Lifestyles Unlimited presents the Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Over the next hour, we unfold your map to financial freedom. You'll learn how to retire through investing in single-family and multifamily real estate. You'll learn how to create cash flow and build wealth so you can have the time and money to live the lifestyle you want.
Hello and welcome to Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Andy Webb, and I thank you for joining me today. You know what we're going to talk about today? You're not going to believe this. We're going to talk about you buying your own apartment community, your own apartment complex, investing in multifamily all by yourself. Did you know you can do that? Yeah, you can. You can. It's interesting. We have a program at Lifestyles Unlimited where it's a two-day over, right, Saturday, Sunday, typically on the weekend. Day one is focused on single family, day two on multifamily. And if you ask a lot of attendees that go to this, one of the things they'll tell you, one of the surprises they'll tell you is, I didn't know I could invest in apartments. You can. You can do that. In fact, you can be what we call an IRO. I-R-O. That's obviously an acronym. Stands for Independent Rental Owner. And when we use that term on this show or at Lifestyles Unlimited, we are talking about somebody that goes out and buys multifamily on their own, not as part of a syndication, not as part of a big group, right? Just by themselves, maybe with a partner. So what I want to do is define just what is an apartment. You may think you know, right? Also known as multifamily. But there are a few misconceptions out there. So we're going to clarify those. We'll talk about why. Why would you want to do this? Sounds scary, right? And we'll talk about some of the hows, right? Like anything else in real estate, it's really just a series of processes. We won't hit them all. There are quite a few. But we'll talk about some of the hows. And I'll present some of the challenges that you could encounter so that you can start thinking about these now. Get your broom out and start sweeping those out of the way. Before we even get to that, though, I do want to define the four, let's say, tracks that we typically talk about at Lifestyles Unlimited with respect to residential real estate investing. We're just going to hit these broadly. And I specifically said residential because there's a lot of real estate out there, right? Everything's built on land. That's raw land. That's real estate. You can invest in that. You can invest in storage facilities. You can do nursing facilities. You can do short-term rentals. There's a lot of stuff, commercial, retail, etc. But we just focus on residential. Why is that? Well, there's a need for that. In fact, it's a big topic in today's market is affordable housing. There's a shortage. So there's definitely a demand there. And when people can't buy, what do? They rent. And what do they rent? Well, one of two things typically. One of those is single family. That's something we talk about quite a lot on this show. I'm a longtime single family investor. That's where I dug my teeth in was in single family, buying rental houses starting way back in 2012. Did I know anything about this space before I began? I did not. Where did I learn about it? Well, listening to this radio show. I wasn't doing the radio show back then. I didn't have a clue. I learned a lot listening to the radio. And then eventually I went in. I said, hey, let's check this thing out. Got embedded with Lifestyles Unlimited, went down the education track and just started buying houses. That got us retired, my wife and me. So single family, great place to start. And if the notion, what we're talking about today, if the notion of investing in multifamily is too scary, well, you might want to start with a few single-family rental houses. Ooh, for a lot of people, saying a few single-family is probably scary because guess what? And I encountered this. Buying that first house was tough. Not because of finances, not because we couldn't find that investment property. We walked I don't know how many houses over probably about a 6 to 8 month span before we finally pulled the trigger, just hesitating due to simple fear. But eventually the education and networking and being around like-minded people helped pull those barriers down. But if apartments seem scary, go invest in a single family rental house. Great place to start. I understand your fear. Let's get you over that hump. Now, if it's not single family, then it must be multifamily. And there are really three ways that we invest in multifamily. You might say apartments. When it comes to Lifestyles Unlimited, the first of those is passive. And here too, if you're kind of scared about the notion of buying my own apartment community by myself, you might test the waters by investing passively. It's really a good way to get an inside look at multifamily without doing the work. It's passive. It's not active. I'm an investor now in a lot of multifamily investments as a passive investor. I read the reports every month when they come out. I check my bank, you know, hey, they're making a distribution. Awesome. I love it. And then I look for new investments as they come up on the horizon, and they will be coming up on the horizon. I'll tell you a little bit more about that later in the show. So passive is a good way to get that, let's say, first look. Is this really something I want to do? You know, some people say, I love single family. They go back to that. Some people say, I hate single family. Let's get into apartments. Until you try it, you won't know. Okay, so passive, good way to go. Another hat you could wear is that active role as what we call a lead investor. Lead investor in the broader apartment market would be called a syndicator. Maybe a general partner, a deal sponsor, you'll hear those terms. Basically, they're the ones that find this apartment investment opportunity, and they put together an action plan. We're going to take this thing down, and you, my passive friends, can invest with me. Right? I love leads. Some of my favorite leads, by the way, started out as independent rental owners, as IROs, with their own small multifamily. I know one guy bought 5 units, then became a lead. I know another couple bought 8 units, then became leads. A lot of people do this. And I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but it's essentially kind of like training wheels, isn't it? You know, let's give this thing a try. Again, proof of concept. To their credit, these leads that went that route first, that small multifamily, small IRO as a solo owner, they just wanted to be sure that they were comfortable managing multifamily before they took other people's money with them into a syndication. I think that's great. By the way, I talked on a recent show about proof of concept more broadly in real estate. And if you want to check out that show, go to lifestylesunlimited.com. We've got a podcast tab there. You can check that show out, plus any of the shows Mike Harrison, Al Gordon have done, as well as Del Walmsley, the founder of Lifestyles Unlimited. So two tracks so far in multifamily. You can be a passive investor. You can be an active investor as a lead. Or, of course, what we're going to talk about today is being a multifamily investor as an independent rental owner. Yes, you can become an independent rental owner of an apartment community. That means buying those apartments all by yourself. And we've been talking about some of the different things we might do as investors within the residential real estate space. There's investing in a single family rental house. I love houses. I have a lot of houses. I will always have houses in my portfolio, but I've also since shifted to become a passive investor in apartments. So that's another way to invest. Or you could be the lead investor. I connect with leads. I place my money with those leads and those syndications that they put together. That's a second way. Right? Passive investor, third way, lead. And of course, the fourth thing that we talk about at Lifestyles Unlimited is the IRO, independent rental owner. Now, the cool thing with real estate, I love residential rental real estate. We make money multiple ways. I mean, that's a big reason to invest in residential rental real estate. There are lots of other reasons. Just quickly, I'm not going to dive into these in depth. We've talked about these on a lot of show, but we want to make cash flow, right? Collect a rent, pay the expenses. The profit goes into my pocket. That's cash flow. That's what I live off personally now since I've retired from corporate America. Cash flow from my houses, cash flow from my passive investments in apartments. Now, when we buy these assets, whether it's houses or apartments, if we buy right, we get it at a discount and we're able to capture equity. Quick example, just using numbers on houses. I like these numbers because they're round. They're easy to think about. If I buy a house for $100,000, but it needs work, right? That house should be worth $200,000, but I'm able to get it for $100,000. Why? Because it's in distress, physical distress. Typically, probably the seller might be in some level of financial distress, pre-foreclosure, etc. But for whatever reason, I'm able to get it at a discount, but it needs work. Buy it for $100,000, do $50,000 in repairs. And as we said, its market value when it's fixed up is actually $200,000. That gap in there, that's equity capture, and that can be a very large number. We see that on apartments. It's really present in houses. Now, we hold this asset. We collect that rent like we talked about. What do we pay from that rent? Fixed expenses, including the mortgage. So every month I'm paying down that principal balance. Really, my residents pay that for me, don't they? That's a beautiful thing. And my equity builds up. What do we call that? Equity buildup. Pretty simple. And what happens alongside is I hold this thing, market appreciation. Again, equity builds up through market appreciation. Now, it ends there with cash flow and equity with my houses. Now, we do have tax advantages. It's not so much making money as keeping the money that I have made. And the tax advantages in rental real estate are huge. Big in houses, even bigger when you get into the apartment space. One of the big reasons why you might consider being an IRO. So we make money multiple ways, 5 in our houses, 5 in apartments, except there's another reason to invest in apartments. And that's something called forced appreciation. So why do IRO? Why not just do single family houses? That seems a lot simpler, seems a lot more palatable to me. It's something I can wrap my head around. And if you can't yet wrap your head around independent rental ownership, proper education will get you there. We'll talk about that just a little bit. But the way, this is something you need to think about. The way those apartments are valued versus the way your single family houses are valued are very much different. I own a lot of houses and I check those values every year. I want to see where my portfolio sits. How do I do that? Well, I go out into the MLS in the local multiple listing service and I see what have other houses within that subdivision sold for in the last, let's say, 180 days, maybe 120, maybe 90 is even better in the current market, right? Keep it as short as I can. Okay. Well, I take those comparable sales, and if those houses are like my house, guess what? That's where my value derives. The value of my house is based on what other houses in that neighborhood have sold for. Is that how it works for apartments? No, it isn't. Not at all. Now, somebody might look at the comparable sales, right? It's good information. But ultimately, it comes down to that thing we mentioned a minute ago, which is cash flow. And not just cash flow, but specifically net operating income. I won't get into the difference here. Cash flow actually comes below net operating income because typically you have debt service. Most people do. If you're buying apartments all cash, you are flush with cash. Good for you. But typically we're financing. We'll talk about that here in a little bit as well. But we look at that net operating income, and the value of those apartments is driven by that number. I could have two apartments with the same unit count, look the same, but one is mismanaged and that net operating income is lower. Well, its value will be lower as a result. That's a big reason to get into apartments. You can force that value up simply by improving the net operating income. Does that sound hard? It's not. We've got a sheet of 30 plus ways to improve that net operating income. Different things, different tactics you can take, and that includes kind of two sides of the lever. You can force up revenue, right? Add new revenue items. I see a lot of multifamily apartments. I've worked on due diligence with people that are looking, investors that are looking to buy. And when you look at some of the lease audits, well, there are pets in place. We saw that when we walked the apartments. Where are the pet fees? If they're not charging those, you add that back, start collecting those. That revenue goes up. Net operating income goes up. Value jumps. It's not a one-to-one, it's not a linear equation, it's more of a hockey stick. So if you can raise that revenue a little bit, man, that value can really pop. On the other hand, you can also work on pulling the expenses down. So really you should be attacking both of those, boy, and you can just force that value up. And as I said, we call that forced appreciation. So if you're asking yourself, why would I do apartments at all? I live in a house, I understand houses, and I understand where you're coming from. But that forced appreciation component just doesn't exist. I mean, to the extent that I'm going in and fixing up that house, that's kind of the equivalent, but it stops there. Every year that I take my rent up on my single family houses, that does not affect the value in the least. Whereas in apartments, it does. So give that some thought. That's a really big reason to do this. Now, I want to go back to something I said earlier. There's some misunderstanding, I think, in the market. Just the verbiage I hear newer people using when they're talking about buying multifamily. They say, I want to buy multifamily. And I say, okay, let's talk about that. What is it you're thinking about? Okay, and I want to get to what do they mean? Are they talking about apartments really? And as I dive deeper, it comes out, well, they just mean a duplex, or maybe a triplex, or maybe a fourplex, a quad. Those are not, I know you're thinking, well, there are multiple families living there, right? Well, yeah, of course. You have a duplex, you have two doors, you have two families. It's not really multifamily. In fact, here in Texas, if I write a contract using the TREC, the Texas Real Estate Commission promulgated form, it's called the 1-to-4 family resale contract, something like that. 1-to-4 family being the point. And they clearly lump that duplex, that triplex, that quad into the single family space. Now, duplex, triplex, quad, if I buy some of those, they're going to be managed a little bit differently than a single family. Okay. But the big, big thing you need to think about when it comes to duplex, triplex, quad, and true multifamily is the financing. And we're going to get to the financing, like I mentioned, a little bit later, because it's important for you to understand this, because that plays into our conversation around driving up value, forcing appreciation, improving that NOI, because when you have financing in place, and we always put financing in place in our houses as well, it's really just a force multiplier. When I have $20,000 invested into that $200,000 house, when I see market appreciation, when I see equity build up, that's all going to me, even though there's a loan in place. especially with the market appreciation. The same is true with apartments. If I have debt on that property and maybe I've put 25% down as my share of that investment as an IRO, every time I force up the value, does that have any impact on the debt? No. But every incremental increase in value goes to my pocket. So if I paid all cash for that $1 million asset, or I've only brought a quarter of a million, you can see where the return goes up stupendously. It's just a great way to think about this. So financing important. Quick break. Talk to you later.
Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show returns in a moment. Got questions? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com.
Looking for a smarter way to build income?
Lifestyles Unlimited teaches real estate investing strategies designed to help you take control of your future. Text radio to 88007. Radio to 88007.
Creating the lifestyle you've always wanted. You're hearing Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome back to Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show. I'm glad you could join me today. Hey, if you have any questions, you can send me an email to askandy@luinc.com. Again, askandy@luinc.com. And we're talking today about the fact that you can become an independent rental owner of an apartment complex, meaning you can go out and buy your own apartments. Yeah, you can. You can. A lot of people don't realize this till they come to Lifestyles Unlimited, hear other people talk, and you would be surprised at the number of IROs we have within the group. There are a lot of people that have single families and small multifamily, or small multifamily and their leads, or they've done it all. I love talking to everybody and hearing their stories. It's fascinating, and that's a great thing you can do at Lifestyles Unlimited at the various events and whatnot. But thinking about IRO, I mentioned the other tracks. You could do single family. You could become a lead investor. You could be passive. Let's just very quickly, I want to just give you some other fodder to think about here. When it comes to single family, for example, we talked about the differences in valuation, hugely important. You can really affect a greater impact to your wealth by forcing up that value, forcing that appreciation in apartments. Cannot do that in single family. Something else to think about, and I speak here from the perspective of a single family investor with houses all across Dallas-Fort Worth, down near Houston. I've been doing this for over a decade, and that's the management angle. So let's say you have a friend with 16 single family houses spread across the Metroplex, and you've got this other buddy with 16 doors in a two building apartment community. Who do you think has an easier time, assuming the single family is self-managing, assuming the apartment owner is as well, who do you think has an easier time managing their 16 doors? Yeah, the apartment investor, that owner of houses, like I've experienced, like mine are, they're just spread out. I don't buy one zip code. I buy where I find the right numbers, the right investment criteria, the right deal. So I'm all over the place. And that can be a little bit more of a challenge. Now, flip side is the tenure. The length of time that residents tend to stay in houses tends to be longer than you're going to experience in apartments. It's just a simple fact. Apartment renters tend to be more transient. Now, you see the people that have been in that apartment. I've seen this on due diligence, walk-in apartments with lead investors that are looking to buy their next deal. And yeah, there's some people that stick around in apartments for a long time, 10, 20, 30 years. It happens, but it's less common. So there's a trade-off there. Yes, on the management perspective, in terms of operations with single-family houses, there's maybe a little more work. You know, single-family tenants, on the other hand, take care of the yard. It's written into my lease. They have to take care of the lawn, you know, get up the leaves, all that fun stuff. They pay for all the utilities. They cover their own basic pest control. They deal with their own garbage. On the multifamily side, you're going to provide the pest services. You're going to take care of the common areas, right? If you start getting into something with a pool, for example, you've got outdoor lighting. That's on you. You're going to have utilities associated with that. You may have centrally metered utilities associated with that property. Now, you can bill those back, but there are those common area utilities. So there are certain trade-offs that you can think about in terms of the costs as well. But going back to the management, it's much easier to manage 16 doors under one or two roofs than 16 doors spread out across all of North Texas. And a big advantage, simply, economies of scale. Because when you have multiple doors under one roof with multiple air conditioning systems, it's a lot easier to send your guy out, boom, 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 to do that service. It's going to be a little cheaper for you. If you have to replace a lot of AC units, you can negotiate a better deal due to economies of scale. And the bigger those apartments get, the better that negotiating power that you have. So some differences there. Control, by the way, though, as a single-family rental owner, I self-manage. I'm in full control, and the same will be true for you as an independent rental owner. And I'm going to compare that now to being a passive investor in apartments. Do you have control? No, you do not. You control your decision-making at the start of the process. Yes, I want to invest with this syndicator, not with that one. And then you're done. Now, you may have some voting rights in terms of, hey, let's vote on whether we refinance, whether we're going to sell, that sort of thing. That's going to come down to what's in the operating agreement, which you need to know how to read very well as a passive investor. That's all I'm going to say on investing passively. It's a control thing, right? I, again, invest passively, so I've experienced both sides of this, the spectrum there. Now, let's talk about being a lead investor compared to being an IRO. They're essentially doing the same thing. Full control, right? Lead is in control. IRO is in control. They're out there finding the asset, buying that asset, right? Writing the offer, et cetera, working with the team, getting that under control, right? Closing on it, repositioning it. That may mean renovations. That may mean improvements in operations. Things like I talked about, billing back for charging for pet rent, billing back for utilities, et cetera, driving up the value, right? Forcing that appreciation. We talked about that, collecting cash flow, collecting the gains. True for syndicators, true for leads, true for the IRO. But, yeah, there's a but there, right? With a syndication, there are a few more layers by the very nature of the beast, because what are you doing as a syndicator? It's not just you. You're reaching out to people like me who are passive investors and saying, hey, you want to come along for the ride? Yeah, I want to come along for the ride. Here's my money. But now I'm in that car with you and you got to talk to me occasionally. You got to communicate with me, right? You will have lower investment in that apartment as a lead investor than I would as an IRO if I just bought the whole thing by myself. Again, by the nature of the beast, because you're bringing money along with you for the ride. That's good news for you. So if you're not working with a ton of capital, becoming a lead investor may be the place to start. But there are those extra layers. You do have those other people along for the ride with you. So there is reporting. As an IRO, do I have to report to anybody? Yes, my lender. That's going to be true for the syndicator, but I don't have those passive investors, those passive partners that I need to report to every month. And then there's the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, because what you put together as a lead investor, as a syndicator, technically, yeah, it's a security. So there are some things to consider from the legal perspective and from the SEC perspective. And what does that mean? That means engaging attorneys, and they're going to write up things like a private placement memorandum with which you advertise that syndication to your network. It is a private placement memorandum. They're going to write up the operating agreement. They're going to write up the subscription agreement. You're going to subscribe or pay for a CRM, right? What is that? Customer resource management, whatever that means, CRM. K-1s. Right? Ooh, as we move into tax time, I'm going to be looking for all the K-1s for my lead investor. So all of the point is there are a lot more moving parts, a lot more moving parts. And with those moving parts, there comes a greater cost as well. Just more of a process to manage, more mouths to feed, more people to report to, right? You're reporting to your investors. So IRO, it's a little simpler, a little more streamlined. And as an IRO, something to think about, right? We're making money multiple ways. We're driving up the wealth, we're forcing appreciation, we bought right, so we had equity capture at the beginning, our residents are paying down the mortgage every month, so we're seeing equity gains there, we got the cash flow. And when the syndicator collects that, they get to distribute some of that. Yeah, it goes out to me, the passive. But that IRO, that is 100% yours. You get to keep, you get to retain all that equity, you get to retain all that cash. That is yours. You decide what to do with that. And when you do your accounting, we talked about the K-1s, there's no K-1. But you are going to depreciate that asset, and you get to take 100% of that depreciation to your bottom line. It's a paper expense that really can drive a loss and does drive a loss on these businesses in the eyes of the IRS and reduces or zeroes out our tax liability. So you as an IRO, this is for you that own businesses already outside of the real estate space. Think about this. As an IRO, you get all the benefits of those depreciation losses. Just like the cash flow, just like the gains, which are shared among the passive investors, those depreciation losses, when they're calculated, those get spread out on a per rata basis to the passive investors as well. So really, it's both have control, right? IRO steers, lead steers, just how the downstream impact of being the one or the other, how that comes into play. We talked about some of the differences, just some stuff, just some meat for you to chew on. Think about these things. And if you want to learn more, I would really encourage you to get out to, I just mentioned our two-day, our investor intensive. We simply went in thinking, yeah, we'll do houses. And we did houses. But we've since become owners in apartments as well. And you can too. And you can go straight there. You don't have to do the single family. You don't have to be a lead. You don't have to be a passive. You can be an IRO. So what are the first steps? Let's talk about that, to becoming an IRO. I think education in this space is hugely important. Again, we had no background, my wife and I, even in doing the single family investing that we've, I guess, become pros at. We had no background. We did the education. And the same rules here. You need to get educated, properly educated in this space. Very easy to do at Lifestyles Unlimited. We have, I don't know how many classes. Actually, I do know. I took a look. There's several different programs. There's one called Multifamily Core Curriculum. This is something any of the members that are in the preferred space can take here that are focused on apartments, whether you're passive, IRO, lead, doesn't matter. I encourage everybody to take this. It's 30 classes. And in fact, the second of these classes specifically is focused on the IRO, independent rental owner. All the classes, all the sundry classes that build on that really support you in your journey as well. Whether you want to be a syndicator or an IRO, it talks about how to locate multifamily property, how to evaluate those, doing a property tour and a drive-by, financing, feasibility, right? That's your due diligence. When I buy a single family house, I do my due diligence. Is this really going to work? You do the same, and you certainly do the same for a big multifamily deal as well. Feasibility, things to do, right? During the closing process, contract to close, budgeting, etc. Lots of classes. I don't need to name them all for you. Those are just the core. And then there are a ton of electives. And anyhow, point is, there's a lot of education opportunity for you here. If you think you want to be an IRO and you're not sure what to do, I would really encourage you to get an education. And I will tell you that Lifestyles Unlimited is a great place to go. Now, beyond that, if you do not have one already, this is imperative. As a single family investor, I learned to build this early on, but if you are going to be an apartment investor, you absolutely must have a personal financial statement. Whatever lender you work with is going to need to see that. They will ask you for that, and in fact, they're probably going to present you their form. So everything you prepared over here, you're going to now translate into their space. Unfortunately, that's how it is. But you need to have a personal financial statement. They need to know who you are financially, and you need to know who you are financially. So if you've never built one, we've talked about this on earlier shows, learn how to build your balance sheet. That's all it is. Assets, liabilities equals net worth. Assets minus liabilities equals net worth. And among other things, knowing that number will help you determine your purchasing power. Now, it's not just your net worth. Obviously, you need to have capital cash as well. But that'll tell you what your purchasing power is and how big you can go in terms of unit count, right? Depends on market, of course. A unit, single unit in a 20-unit building in downtown Dallas is going to be different than a single unit in a 20-unit in Canton, Texas, out in Van Zandt County, out in rural Texas, right? Two different things, right? So, but wherever you're shopping, how far can you go in terms of units and in terms of loan size? You have to have this information. And in tandem with that, you want to start to build a network. I mentioned earlier, I've talked to tons of investors that are IROs. If you want to be an IRO, independent rental owner, doesn't it make sense to talk to others and see what their experience has been? Maybe they've got a few tips and tricks for you. Of course it does. And find a mentor. This is somebody that will guide you. If you are a member at Lifestyles Unlimited, you know we have mentors both for single family and multifamily investors. These are two different types of mentors. And I'm always going to be in conversation with my mentor as I go into a new acquisition. And speaking of acquisition, in order to acquire, I need to find. How do I find those apartments? Well, you need to connect with apartment brokers. We have those, right, as part of Lifestyles Realty. You need to get to know them. It's actually a pretty small community of brokers, and you want to get your name out there. Is it a buddy-buddy system? Sometimes it appears to be. So you need to be in there and be one of the buddies if you can, and then lean on those. You know, I lean on Lifestyles Realty as much as I can. And then you want to connect with lenders, the money guys, right? You don't want to be paying all cash for $1 million, $2 million, $5 million apartment community, do you? Maybe you haven't. I know I didn't, right? So connect with lenders. Banks, credit unions, that's one space. If you're going for smaller apartments, 5-unit, 8-unit, 10-unit, 20-unit, maybe that's the bank lender. For bigger apartments and bigger loan sizes, that may be Fannie Mae, that may be Freddie Mac, especially Freddie Mac. As you're starting out and you're doing a smaller unit count and a smaller loan size, you're probably going to start with a Freddie Mac small balance loan. Again, here talking with lenders and brokers in particular, not the brokers that are finding the units, but the brokers that are brokering the money, they'll be able to steer you in the right direction for any given asset. They're going to look at the asset and they're going to know, well, the best thing for this will be that Freddie Mac small balance loan, or no, it needs a lot of rehab, go with that local community bank. So talk with those lenders and those money brokers and get pre-qualified. Again, this will tell you your financial firepower in the space, so you're not going out and chasing that 20-pound gorilla when really you can only be 20-pound. Is there a gorilla that's 20-pound? You know what I mean. The big gorilla when really you need to be chasing that bonobo chimp or something smaller, right? That's the point. So know what your target is, and those lenders will help you figure that out. And start your actual search for the right property. So those are just some of the first steps. And boy, I'll tell you, if you become a member at Lifestyles Unlimited and start going through this core class, you'll see there are lots of other things you need to do and learn how to do. And those classes will help you. And those mentors will help you. And that realty team will help you. And when you get that unit closed, we have a special team called Operation Consultants that help you with the ongoing hold period. You have a question? Talk with them. They're going to know the answer. They've been doing this for I don't know how long. How many units they've had under control in the past life and how many leads and IROs they've talked with since becoming consultants here. Big resource. Now, let's talk about a few of the challenges, because there are challenges. And first and foremost, you got to find the property, right? How do you find small multifamily? Maybe you're looking for 5 units. Maybe you're looking for 8, maybe even 20. Where do you go to find these things? Maybe you're looking for larger. Same question applies. 100 units, 200. I've known people that have gone straight into 100-unit apartment communities as IROs. These were business owners that had a lot of capital, right? But most of us don't start there. So we're probably going to be looking for 5, 10, 15, 16, something like that. How do you find those? How do you connect with sellers? Well, I mentioned real estate brokers before. Get connected so that they can do a lot of the legwork for you. And it's worth noting, I actually had an email from one of the multifamily realty team just this week. She said, hey, make sure you're getting my emails, because I'm going to be sending out a lot of blasts. What's a blast? A blast is an email that says, hey, I've got this property. And it's interesting. Let me see if I can find that email real quick here. She used some specific verbiage in, looks like I closed it out. She used some specific verbiage in that email. She said she's going to be bringing apartments that are coming soon, off market, and newly listed. Now, these may sound similar, but they're quite different animals. Coming soon, not yet on the market. Off market, obviously not on the market at all. Newly listed. Once they hit the market, they're going to get a lot more traffic. And the truth of the matter is, a lot of owners, especially seasoned apartment owners, don't really like to list their apartments. Once it's out there, if it doesn't really get movement, that kind of sours, right? It sours the space. So if they can market it off market first, they're going to do that. And if you don't have the connections, you will never see those opportunities. Okay. And by the way, in that email from her, just reading between the lines here, it sounds like stuff's going to start picking up here. So I think you really should get ready, whether you want to be a single family investor, passive, active, or IRO in the apartment space. Get ready. You need to be ready. Sounds like we're going to be seeing some good traffic here. But those off-market ones in particular, I want to think about those, because a lot of the juice that we get comes from those off-market investment opportunities. Again, a lot of owners just want to avoid formally listing that property. So a big challenge is going to be finding the right asset. You need to have a team to help you with that. That's going to be brokers. That's going to be realty. That will be lenders as well. Now, talking about lenders, big issue a lot of people will run into is capital. Again, I mentioned that gorilla. Are you chasing a giant gorilla or is it a junior gorilla? Depends on your capital and your net worth. I don't know if you know this, but if you want to invest in apartments and take a loan for those apartments, your net worth has to be at least the size of the loan. So if I need to take $1 million loan to buy these apartments, my net worth needs to be $1 million or greater. So again, knowing your net worth, creating your personal financial statement will help you figure this out. But it's not just the net worth. You got to have the capital as well. Do the math here. Let's say I want to go out and buy an apartment complex, an apartment community that's listed for $1 million. All right, I'm going to buy it for $1 million. Am I going to bring $1 million? Absolutely not. No way. I'm going to work with a lender. Well, if that lender is going to lend me 75% of the purchase price, let's forget about repairs. Let's just focus on $1 million. 75%, well, that's $750K. I need to bring the rest. That's $250,000. So how much capital do you have on top of that net worth? Oh, and by the way, add into that closing costs, add into that operating capital, and lenders are going to want to see typically 10% of the loan balance in post-closing liquidity, meaning 250 plus, right, 75K in this example, that's still in my bank. So capital can be a challenge, and there are ways to work around that. You can find a partner, somebody else that can bring money. You can find a key principal, a KP. And experience, by the way, can be a challenge as well. And this is where a KP can help you two ways. Number one, they can bring some money. They can bring that net worth. And if they've run apartments before, there's your experience component as well. If you're starting with 5 units, 8 units, 10 units, probably doesn't matter. But if you're going to go straight into a 100-unit apartment community, that experience quotient for that lender will be important. Okay, well, we're coming to the end of the segment here, so I'm going to take a break, and I want you to take a break and give this some thought. Yes, you can invest in apartments all by yourself. How do you do it? Well, we talked a little bit about that today, but you can learn a lot more if you go to lifestylesunlimited.com, listen to the shows here, and go out to some of our events. See you around.
Thank you for listening to Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. We want to meet you as well. Sign up for a free workshop at lifestylesunlimited.com. Until next time, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.